Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, the Department of Health and Human Services released another rule for how states will set up minimum income eligibility requirements for their uninsured residents by 2014, as directed by the Affordable Care Act. On Friday, Acting Administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, Marilyn Tavenier, announced new guidelines for states incorporating uninsured residents into their systems.
That's right, Mark. Now, CMS had already announced the rules for states to set up insurance exchanges for individuals and small businesses, but a big part of this transition to universal coverage or near universal coverage by the year 2014 is this so-called Medicaid expansion, and that, of course, caused some states to balk at the directives in the Affordable Care Act. But these new rules we're seeing don't deviate too far from the existing guidelines for Medicaid coverage for those folks at or near the poverty line.
That's right, Margaret. The new rules announced Friday expand the income eligibility requirements from 133 to 138% of the poverty level, a 5% increase, but still ensuring that many in the most vulnerable group would gain access to health coverage either by being included in Medicaid or being eligible for inclusion in the new insurance exchanges. The Medicaid expansion is expected to add 17 million beneficiaries by 2016.
And one rule, Mark, that's being called for is a single streamlined online application, either for Medicaid eligibility or for eligibility in the health insurance exchange for those families whose incomes are above the Medicaid cutoff. And as we know from experience, anytime you convert these paper processes to an electronic application, it streamlines costs and efficiency. So I think this is a really good directive that we're very supportive of.
You're right on that. And it's interesting to note that even in some states like Mississippi, who have joined the legal protest against the ACA, they're at least making moves to incorporate the new rules, and their state is one of those that stands to benefit greatly from the Affordable Care Act, with roughly a third of their population gaining access to health care one way or another.
Well, that would be remarkable progress. And on that note, Mark, we're pleased to welcome today's guest, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, to our show. When Governor Patrick took office in 2006, it was the same day that the Massachusetts health care reform measures went into effect.
And they were passed, of course, Margaret, by the previous governor, Mitt Romney, but you knew that. There's quite a lot about the Massachusetts health care reform measures that are working, and they're providing a strong template for what to expect with full implementation of the Affordable Care Act.
We have a fascinating interview with Governor Patrick coming up in just a moment. But as always, if you have any questions about our show or any of our shows, Google us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Coming up, our interview with Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
With his headline news, anticipation is amping up for next week's Supreme Court hearing on the Affordable Care Act, a primary issue whether the federal government can order individuals to buy a commodity, in this case, health insurance, a centerpiece of the health care reform legislation. The president's health reform isn't the only thing at stake. The High Court is deciding on a deeper issue of whether the Constitution puts limits on Congress's power to regulate the economy. The plaintiffs in the case, 26 states, argue the federal government has exceeded its power by ordering every American to purchase health insurance, saying the individual mandate is essentially forcing commerce on citizens. 3 days of oral arguments begin Monday, and audio from the Supreme Court hearings will be released at the end of each day's testimony. Meanwhile, in Texas, where one in four residents is uninsured, the battle over Planned Parenthood continues. Governor Rick Perry cut off federal health funds earmarked for a women's health initiative to all Planned Parenthood clinics where many underserved residents receive frontline medical care. The government has responded by suspending funds to the state. Now Texas is suing to get that money. Meanwhile, health care and the economy. There's a hiring boom of sorts. Health care constitutes 17% of the nation's GDP, and hiring in health care set records in January and February. 227,000 jobs added in February alone. And from the buffet line, past the red meat and soda, a couple of studies out show just one 12-ounce can of sugary soda per day increases your risk of heart disease and diabetes significantly, and just 3 ounces of red meat per day increases your risk of heart attack by 16% and stroke by about the same amount. Meanwhile, what's the fastest-growing food chain in America at the moment? Five Guys, Burgers and Fries. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news.
Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, a graduate of Harvard Law School, former Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights under President Clinton, a vocal supporter of health care reform in his state and around the nation. Governor Patrick, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you so much for having me.
When you were elected in 2006, the groundbreaking Massachusetts health care reform law was already in place, but there was still a lot of work to be done to fully implement the law. Can you tell us what it was like transitioning the state of Massachusetts into the first state in the nation to offer a plan for full insurance coverage for pretty close to the entire population? Can you tell us what your biggest obstacles were?
Well, it's been a very exciting time. You're right. The bill was signed the year I was elected, and it took effect the day I took office. And I think one of the most exciting things about it was that this broad coalition of advocates and legislators and folks from different parties and from the business community and from labor and so forth came together and decided that they had more than the usual two choices, meaning between a perfect solution or no solution at all. And we tried something, very much a hybrid system. I'd say that our biggest challenges in the early days were making sure people had information about the services and opportunities available to them under our health care reform, reaching what I call the invincibles, those 20-something males who think that they will always be as vigorous and as strong as they are right now. Mm-hmm. And then the issue of affordability, both on individual policies and where the mandate would kick in, so that we didn't want it to be penal, you know, folks having to purchase something they, in practical terms, couldn't afford. And of course, we've been working on the issues of premium increases year over year for some time now, making some progress there as well.
Governor Patrick, you know, it's been several years now, and long enough really to see some outcomes of almost everyone in your state having insurance. And of course, that's always been the goal. Insurance is the first step. As the only state that's accomplished this level of health reform, you have some important things to share with us. I think maybe you could tell us about the outcomes as a direct result of most of the population being insured in Massachusetts. What do you see?
Well, Margaret, first of all, you're right. We are over 98% of our residents with health insurance, 99.8% of children. I don't think any other state in America can touch that. But over 90% of our residents have access to a primary care physician and can actually get an appointment. There was a survey recently that 4 out of 5 residents have seen their primary care physician in the last year. More businesses are offering health insurance to their employees today than were offering insurance to their employees before health insurance reform went into effect. Health disparities have gone down among African Americans and Latino residents as well. Cancer rates down. Lots of very, very good statistics that come out of this. But Margaret, the stories are even more compelling. Yeah, there's a woman I met named Jacqueline Mikolos who was diagnosed first with breast cancer after she was able to afford health insurance under health care reform in Massachusetts and is today cancer-free. And I hear stories like that over and over again, people who put off seeing a doctor or getting treatment because they couldn't afford it, they couldn't figure out how to make it work before health care reform went into effect. So if you believe, as I do, that policy only matters where it touches people, this is mm-hmm. touching a lot of people in a very, very positive way.
Governor, though it's slowed in the last 2 years, health care costs have continued to outpace economic growth in the past decade, not just in Massachusetts, but really around the nation. You've been pretty articulate that you see cost containment as the next important rung in the ladder to improve healthcare reforms already in place, certainly something the Affordable Care Act is seeking to do on the national level. Tell us about your strategy to control cost and what appears most promising.
Well, it's interesting. You know, in healthcare reform in Massachusetts, the framers dealt with access first and put cost off for another day, and that day is here. Mm-hmm. We saw premiums rising on average, you know, over 16% a couple of years ago. They are less than 2% in Massachusetts today. As I say, this is, and as you said, this is a national problem. It's not limited to Massachusetts, but we are, I think, going to be the place to crack the code on that. And we've taken some steps to move away from fee-for-service, which is the custom, as you know. We have a more aggressive rate review through the insurance commissioner. We have new programs like group purchasing cooperatives and limited network plans. I know this sounds a little like policy speak, Mark, but no. but the idea is to try some new things. Some ways of delivering whole person care, really wellness care, and paying the provider for that quality and value rather than for every test and every office visit. Providers tell us that this is not only more cost-effective care, in fact, it's better care.
Governor Patrick, you've been described as somebody who can bring people together as a uniter. And you've said that healthcare is a common good. It's like clean air, safe streets, and effective education. And the government has to play a role in ensuring that the conditions exist for a healthcare system that we all want. But what is this role of government in assuring the conditions? What are those conditions? And maybe most importantly, as governor, how do you unite the many sides to accomplish this?
Thank you for the question, Margaret. It's an important one. And I think it does have to do with something sometimes policymakers overlook, and that is really creating the right atmosphere for what you're trying to do. I am not a person who believes that government should try to solve every problem in everybody's life. And when it comes to healthcare, I feel very strongly that health is a public good. And we can say all day long we shouldn't have universal access to healthcare, but many people are getting their primary care in emergency rooms right now, which is a higher cost setting, as you know. And many of the kinds of things treated in emergency rooms by the uninsured or the underinsured are preventable ailments at much less cost had they been dealt with at the primary care level. And to the great credit of this broad coalition that came together to invent healthcare reform, they stayed together. They stuck together to refine it as we've gone along, because it has required refinement and would for something as complex and new in many respects as this is.
We're speaking today with Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick about the impact healthcare reform has had on his state. Governor, we've been talking about some of the successes of healthcare reform in Massachusetts, but if you listen to the political pundits in Washington, you might find it hard to recognize how it relates to your own experience in Mass. And it's been mystifying to hear the spate of criticisms about the Affordable Care Act, which is inspired in large part by the reform in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And we have, on one hand, the Supreme Court is about to hear the arguments and the challenge to the legality of the ACA. What are you doing at the national level to address what seems to be an abundance of information about the mounting legal challenges to reform that is largely, as you've mentioned, benefiting so many people, real-life stories of people?
I think that as Americans learn more about national health reform, support for the ACA will grow. You know, our oldest daughter is out of college, is working a couple of different jobs right now. It now means she can stay on our health care policy until she's 26.
Mm-hmm.
Co-pays for preventive care, that's gone now. The fact that you know, if you get really sick, you're not going to be thrown off of your insurance plan or go bankrupt on account of that, which was a common occurrence in the United States before the ACA. I mean, these are huge, real benefits for people. And when you add to that the estimates, I think it was the Congressional Budget Office, that the Affordable Care Act is actually going to reduce the deficit, which stands to reason, back to the point that we are investing instead in prevention rather than on costly care at the back end or in emergency rooms, then it's good for the country. It is amazing. You know, healthcare reform is very popular in Massachusetts. It polls very high in the 60 and 70%. Sometimes if you ask folks in Massachusetts what they think of the Affordable Care Act, it polls in the 50% range. They're the same thing. So there's a lot of work to do to inform people the intentional misinformation of the Affordable Care Act. As that is overcome by real facts and a willingness to get people to listen, I think we'll be all right in the end, and the country will be better for it.
Governor Patrick, you're a champion of civil rights. You've cited that in the Hispanic male population in Massachusetts, because of health reform, 36% increase in early detection of testicular cancer, which of course is highly treatable at that stage.
That's a huge
benefit to a underserved population in just a few short years. I'd like to share with our listeners a little more about your initiatives in Massachusetts and how you've achieved such great successes.
Well, people are working together, Margaret. That's really the secret. I mean, we've made reducing health disparities a centerpiece of what we're trying to do, and healthcare reform has enabled us is to scale up some of those initiatives around public health and preventative health. You mentioned what's happening in terms of Latino and Hispanic men and testicular cancer. We've seen a similar 36% decrease in cervical cancer in women because of wider access to screening. So these really traditional notions of getting early access to detection, to testing, to screening, to information, redound to all of our benefit. And the fact that this is a universal program means that we're reaching into communities that have traditionally been left behind, and the health of those communities is improving as well.
Governor Patrick, you've had a strong background in corporate America, and much of the criticism about health care reform on the national level is going to put undue pressure on small businesses in the country and add to unemployment. In your experience in Massachusetts, how has health reform affected the business climate, and what has the real impact been for employers as well as the uninsured employee?
Well, it's been a great story there, too. I'll tell you, first of all, the number of businesses offering insurance to their employees has actually grown since health care reform here. It's up to 77%, which is well above the national average. And I should also say, by the way, in the 5 years we've been implementing health care reform, we've gone from 47th in the nation in job creation to 5th in the nation today.
Congratulations.
So thank you. And more to do, obviously. And what we've done here, after a couple of years of having all of the leading lights in the industry sitting around my table, and I keep saying to them, why are premiums going up so fast and so high when the cost of everything else is flat or going down? And the answer was always, it's complicated, Governor. And finally, I said, look, enough. The authority I have right now is to cap excessive increases in premiums. Let's start there. And everyone balked, but we got their attention. And then we started to work on new models of payment and delivery of service, meaning moving away from fee-for-service to more integrated care, medical homes. And frankly, a lot of these have been accelerated because of the Affordable Care Act. And that's why we've come down from, you know, as I said earlier, nearly 16%, over 16% average annual premium increases just a couple of years ago to 1.8% this year.
Governor, one thing you have in common with your other governor colleagues around the country is the shortage of primary care providers, because that's really a national problem. But there are some innovative programs underway around the country, and in particular in Massachusetts, that hope to bring more people into primary care. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Massachusetts and what's been most successful for you, because certainly when we talk about health reform, that question always looms large on people's minds.
That's an issue, frankly, I didn't fully appreciate until I got deep into this. We kept hearing about how medical students aren't choosing primary care because, frankly, they just don't make enough money to pay off the cost of medical school. And so how we looked at ways to do loan forgiveness, to encourage more medical students to choose primary care and then stay in Massachusetts, and then to disperse those new doctors to underserved parts of the Commonwealth. We have a very well-developed community health center network here as well, absolutely critical to the success of healthcare reform so that more people can get high-quality care in their community. It's making a difference. As I said earlier, over 90% of our residents have a primary care physician today. And you can actually get an appointment, which is pretty great.
That's very important. Governor, in Massachusetts, you've been a proponent for the adoption of models like group cooperatives and pooling of healthcare resources. So talk to us a little bit about how this could work on a national level and maybe how it relates to the ideas like accountable care organizations and other measures in the Affordable Care Act.
There's a remarkable consensus, I think, Mark, for what I sense among practitioners and policymakers. I mean, all the governors were nodding their heads at the last meeting we all had in Washington about moving away from fee-for-service in favor of paying for the quality or value of the care, that whole person care. And as I say, it's really affirming to hear practitioners say so often, this is why I went to medical school in the first place. So we're seeing lots of pilots assisted, frankly, by the Affordable Care Act. More providers trying medical home or accountable care models, as you referred to manage wellness. We're working with the healthcare community to accelerate this kind of transition. And because through MassHealth, our version of Medicaid, employees, prisoners, and so on, when you add all that up, the state actually touches something like one out of every five persons' healthcare at some level. And so we realized that was quite a lot of buying power. We ought to throw that weight around in favor of the models we're trying to drive in the marketplace. And that's had an enormous benefit. We saved well over $1 billion in our own healthcare costs last year, and we'll do another several hundred million in the coming fiscal year.
Governor Patrick, when I think back on our show over the last year or so, I think maybe Massachusetts has been disproportionately represented because you've been doing so much in health reform and innovation. We've had economist Jonathan Gruber on the show and Larry Levitt, some incredible innovators with MIT connections like Jamie Haywood from the founder of Patients Like Me and John Moore from the MIT Media Lab. And we've also looked at Massachusetts for a couple of years now for the work that's been going on in the development of health information exchanges and advancing electronic health information technology. How much of a role has your progress in that area played in your success in health reform? And how do you see technology and health information technology contributing to moving healthcare forward meaningfully in the United States as a whole?
Well, I think it is about this idea of seamless care, of whole person care. I remember that the ambassador to New Zealand came to visit me once, and he explained how you get a medical record, an electronic medical record at birth in New Zealand, and it's accessible anywhere in the country, any pharmacy, any doctor's office, any emergency room. And it's also accessible, by the way, to the patient. We're not quite there yet, but you can imagine how useful that system is in, number one, avoiding errors, right, which is a big part of healthcare costs, but also assuring a seamlessness as you are transitioned from one specialist to the next or as you move. We have a 98% adoption rate for electronic prescriptions, and we've led the nation in that respect. We're about 70%, I would say, of the state's providers now using electronic health records. So we've got some distance to go, but we've got a great progress. And starting in October, we'll build that statewide health information exchange so that we can connect all the providers in the state and share information using e-health records. So making progress, I think it's absolutely critical that that we use technology to help us with both the quality and the affordability of care. And I think a part of that is what we must do in government to simplify systems as well, so that if there are common codes and common forms and so forth that are used in reimbursement, we can make that a template across the state. That also helps to get costs down, and we want those cost savings to be passed on in the form of lower premiums to residents.
Governor Patrick, we'd like to ask our guest this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Some really exciting things happening out in Oregon State and Washington State, Arkansas, which has many fewer insurers than many states, so they have sort of a more captive audience, and everybody can come to one table. I think they've got some very interesting models happening as well. I think if you start from the perspective that health is a public good and that everyone is entitled to access to great care, then a lot of the creativity and energy that in other places is spent on arguing whether the federal government should have any role in this is more productively spent on how to make people better and their quality of life higher.
We've been speaking today with Governor Deval Patrick of Massachusetts, the only state that has implemented full access to health care coverage for all of its residents and the model for the Affordable Care Act. Governor Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations today.
Thank you for having me, Margaret. And Mark, you be well.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. As a physiatrist, a doctor who specializes in physical medicine and rehabilitation, Dr. Julie Silver knows a thing or two about treating other people's pain. Then, she herself was diagnosed with breast cancer. After enduring surgeries and toxic chemotherapy, she was left so weakened by the treatments she was unable to work or even take care of herself or her three small children. And she realized that there was no rehabilitation program to help her and the 12 million other cancer survivors like her as they tackle the residual symptoms that often follow cancer treatment. Dr. Silver, a professor of medicine at Harvard, noted that much of the debilitating after effects came from the rigorous treatments, not from the cancer itself, and her symptoms included everything from pain and fatigue to cognitive impairment, loss of strength, and depression. She combined her expertise in physical rehab with her personal cancer experience and that of others and founded Oncology Rehab Partners. She then developed the STAR program, which stands for Survivorship Training and Rehabilitation. It's a comprehensive certification program for healthcare professionals and institutions that provides evidence-based treatment protocols to speed the healing of cancer survivors. The STAR program has been adopted by over 30 hospitals and healthcare programs around around the country and is helping to restore a better quality of life and health outcomes for patients. A program that helps restore patients dealing with cancer to a normal home and work life through complex and targeted rehabilitation therapy? Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.